RIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says some Western countries took a failed gamble at the recent riots in the country, and now they admit their miscalculation. China says its strike drills are a response to what it calls provocations by Taiwan to U.S., and that after Taipei accused Beijing of breaching its air defense identifications. South Korea accuses the neighboring North of flying several drones across their shared border, prompting Seoul to deploy warplanes to shoot them down. Live from our Tehran headquarters, this is World News. I'm Behruz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. The Iranian Foreign Ministry says that Western countries have admitted to their miscalculation of the riots in the country. Nasser Kanani says that Western delegations have acknowledged the fact during their meetings with Iranian officials. The spokesman says that some of these countries took a failed gamble on the riots. According to Kanani, Western governments are no longer after political change in Iran, but he warned that Iran won't forget the role in the riots. He also addressed the issue of foreign detainees in the incidents. The spokesman said that Tehran has notified their countries, and some have been allowed to contact their families in a humanitarian gesture on Christmas. Now, ordinary Yemenis are applauding the Yemeni government for forcing the Saud-led coalition to release Yemeni fuel ships that were detained early this week. The release of the fuel ships has resulted in lower fuel prices in areas controlled by the government. Yusuf Mauri has more.
Fuel prices have slightly dropped in Yemen after the release of two Yemeni fuel ships that were detained by the Saudi-led coalition earlier this week in the Red Sea. The Yemeni army issued a stern warning to Saudi Arabia and the UAE that if the ships were not released soon, military action would follow. Yemeni bus and motorbike drivers in the capital Sana'a, who make a living from public transportation, welcomed the lowering of fuel prices. They say this is going to help them cope with the fuel price hike caused by the blockade.
I am pumping 1 liter for only 500 Yemeni rials, whereas before it used to cost us 1,500 to 2,000 for 1 liter.
The Saudi-led coalition who are seizing Yemeni fuel ships do not respond to peaceful dialogue. They only respond to us when we decide to use our military power, and if that's the case, so be it.
Yemeni political expert says the release of the fuel ships by the Saudi-led coalition isn't enough, as Yemen will continue to struggle until Saudi Arabia and its allies completely lift the blockade and end their illegal involvement in Yemen.
Although the price of fuel has slightly dropped, we still need to look at the more pressing issue, and that is the fact that the Saudi-led coalition is still occupying Yemen. We need to reach an ultimate solution that can only come through taking decisive military actions against them. This is the only solution.
Despite falling oil prices, tensions are rising on all active battlefronts in Yemen for what could soon be a resumption of war if a political solution is not reached soon. This as Saudi Arabia and the UAE continue their militarization of strategic Yemeni islands in the Red and Arabian Sea.
The release of Yemeni fuel ships by the Saudi-led coalition marks a big victory for the Yemeni government based in Sana'a and to the people living in the areas controlled by Ansar Allah. This also indicates that Saudi Arabia and the UAE simply cannot afford to have their oil industry targeted by Yemeni ballistic missiles, which is why they chose a safer option by releasing the fuel vessels. Yusuf Mawadi, Sana'a.
In the meantime, an Omani delegation has been holding talks with Ansar Allah officials in the Yemeni capital. In the past 5 days, senior Yemen negotiator Mohammed Abdusalam saying Ansar Allah has held intensive discussions with other parties for truce since the last ceasefire expired in early October. He also said that any ceasefire must be coupled with the lifting of the Saud-led siege on Yemen. Our correspondent joined us earlier with more details.
Their efforts here in Sana'a over the past five days has, you know, is to no avail. And the main reason for that is because, you know, Saudi Arabia, they're very smart. They're putting pressure on this Omani delegation to present to the Sana'a-backed government, to present to Ansar Allah the conditions, the political and military conditions of Saudi Arabia. However, you know, Ansar Allah has been very firm in responding back to this delegation and telling them that, hey, listen, if there are going to be any compromises politically or military compromises, we first have to address and we first have to resolve the humanitarian file. In other words, Ansar Allah is basically telling this Omani delegation that before we can discuss the political file, before we can discuss the military file between Saudi Arabia and Yemen, you know, the suffering must be alleviated. And that comes with the lifting, you know, 100% lifting of the Saudi-backed blockade on the port of Hodeidah. That comes through paying government salaries to Yemeni employees, and that comes through the execution of opening Sana'a International Airport without there being any restrictions. However, you know, Ansar Allah is basically saying that, you know, there's not going to be any discussion, political discussions or military discussions until we first alleviate the suffering of the Yemeni people. And this is why, so far, this Omani delegation has failed to reach compromise between both sides of the conflict.
A senior Hamas official says the Palestinian people are capable of defeating the Israeli occupation regime and its new fascist cabinet. Khaled Mashal says that the new Israeli cabinet, which is actually led by Benjamin Netanyahu, is full of far-right extremist figures. He said that Israel thinks this extremist cabinet can put an end to the Palestine cause, but the Palestinian people can turn this new challenge into an opportunity through unity. Citing the so-called normalization deals with several Arab countries, Mashal added that this year's World Cup in Qatar showed us an illusion that Arab countries can truly normalize ties with Israel. He stressed Muslim nations are united in their opposition to the Zionist regime. Khaled Mashal made a comment while addressing a ceremony in Lebanon, marking the 35th anniversary of the formation of the resistance movement. Saad Nimri, professor of political science at Berzich University, says that the Israeli regime blames Palestinians for the violence and conflict going on in the occupied territories.
Israel, in the last few years and during Trump administration, they were also in a kind of deadlock. On the one hand, they are facing criticism for not going ahead with the peace process with the Palestinians and not giving the Palestinians anything, and being accused that they are, you know, stalling the peace process. So they wanted to prove that no, they are doing peace, and they relied on Trump administration, who put pressures on some of the Arab countries to normalize relationship with Israel. And that happened with two Gulf states, plus Morocco and also Sudan recently. Now, the thing is, Israel by that is thinking that they are trying to say, here we are, you know, seeking peace, and we are doing peace with the other Arabs, and we have no problems. It's the problem with the Palestinians themselves. It's not with the with the Arabs generally. And those Arab countries were under tremendous pressure by Trump administration at that time. Now, for us as Palestinians, definitely this is a stab in the back, because there is resolutions by the Arab League not to normalize relationship with Israel unless they give us the Arabs the land occupied in 1967, including West Bank, Gaza Strip, Jerusalem, as well as Golan Heights.
Taiwan accusing China of breaching its air defense identification zones in the past day. Taipei says that Beijing deployed 71 warplanes in military exercises around the South Rule Island on Sunday. Officials described the drills as one of the largest Chinese Air Force incursions ever. Beijing says that the strike drills are a response to what it calls provocations by Taiwan and the United States. The military is stressing that it would take all necessary measures to defend China's national sovereignty and territorial integrity. China considers Taiwan part of its territory and is opposed to its military ties with the U.S. The island, however, has been expanding collaboration with Washington. It's also recently authorized up to $10 billion in security assistance for Taiwan. Now, public analyst Angelo Giuliano was earlier with us, and here's his take on the rising tensions between the U.S. and China over Taiwan.
very key element factor here in the region is that will Japan back this aggression on China? Because they don't have the U.S. doesn't have forces in the region except in Japan and Korea. And it seems like Korea is not going to jump in this war against China. But Japan has made some steps. The first step was to do a reinterpretation of the Japanese constitution, which is Pacific. In this reinterpretation, it says that Japan could actually come to the help of an ally. And after that, what Japan did was to define Taiwan as a Japan ally. So that is a problem. Japan might be shifting, and they need Japan. If Japan is not on board, there's not a single chance that they could do anything. But ultimately, we are playing, the U.S. is playing on Chinese ground. Southeast Asia is Chinese ground. It is extremely difficult, it would be extremely difficult for the U.S. to fight China. So the only thing that the U.S. is hoping is to destroy Chinese economy, to isolate China, and maybe to do a blockade. There are very strategic points like the Malacca Strait where they could do a blockade, pretty much similar to what the U.S. did in World War II against Japan.
Now, South Korea says that several drones from the north violated its airspace in a new escalation between the two sides. Seoul says it responded by scrambling fighters and military choppers and firing warning shots. Flights were also temporarily suspended at civilian airports near the capital. South Korea is saying it's not clear whether the aircraft were armed. This is the first time that North Korean drones entered the South's airspace in 5 years. Pyongyang has also tested a record blitz of missiles in response to U.S. military presence in the region and the hawkish security strategy by the new South Korean government. The year 2022 is drawn to a close, and this is typically a festive time marked by happiness. But for many families in the U.S. and the U.K., this year has been especially hard as they had to deal with issues ranging from hunger to a cost of living crisis.
This Christmas is not a time for cheers and festivities for many in the U.S. A hunger crisis is affecting U.S. households. Food insecurity is already a critical problem affecting millions of Americans. One of the most typical factors affecting people suffering from food insecurity this time of the year are extreme winter conditions. But this year especially, many are suffering from hunger and high food prices due to unprecedented inflation that has gripped the U.S.
The gas, the food, everything, milk, egg, everything is high now.
It is concerning, so I always shop online to make sure that I can find the best prices for groceries and for, like, gas as well.
Last year, more than 33 million Americans lived in food-insecure households, including 9 million children. The figure dropped in 2021, thanks to COVID relief programs. One also does not need to look any further than U.S.'s food assistance program called SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, to see the severity of the problem. The federal government increased SNAP by 12.5% this fall, adjusted to the rate of inflation. In the fiscal year 2021, SNAP served an average of 41.5 million people per month. The U.S. President Joe Biden may boast of a minor drop in inflation.
And yesterday, we got data that showed that manufacturing orders were up, but cost increases in supply chain items were beginning to ease. The week before that, we got data showing the price increase may be beginning to ease as well.
But the fact of the matter is that the U.S. population is suffering from poverty, unemployment, a lack of affordable housing, and lack of access to health care. This is on top of systemic racial inequities. All of these factors have driven food insecurity that affects around 10% of U.S. households.
The United States is not the only country suffering from food poverty. The UK is also experiencing the same issue, mainly due to inflation, which are at record levels in both countries. The rest of the world is also suffering from food inflation. The war in Ukraine has exacerbated the situation, When it comes to wheat production, Ukraine's output has fallen by 40%, affecting millions of people worldwide. Russia says it won't give in to any price caps on its energy resources, adding that the issue is out of the question. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said that imposing such caps is unacceptable and that Russia is opposed to any interference in the process of market pricing. The European Union, the G7 group of developed economies, and Australia reached an agreement on enforcing a ceiling of $60 per barrel on Russian oil in early December. Moscow already said it's planning to set up a mechanism which bans Russian companies from selling oil to countries imposing a price cap on Russian oil. In the meantime, Moscow is saying it's ready to boost gas supplies to Europe as the continent is grappling with multiplied energy costs triggered by disruptions to imports from that country. Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak says that gas shortage in Europe persists and Moscow has every opportunity to resume exports. Novak says that Russia can increase the gas deliveries to Europe through the pipeline that has stopped working after war broke out in Ukraine. The official says that Moscow is also discussing additional supplies through Turkey, where Russia intends to set up a gas hub. Russia cut its supplies to Europe after the EU imposed sanctions on it over the war in Ukraine. The energy crunch has forced Europe to switch supplies at a high cost, fueling record inflation figures and fears for member countries' energy security. The death toll from a brutal blizzard in the United States and Canada has risen to at least 38 as the Arctic freeze continues to ravage North America. According to officials, 34 people died across the U.S. where the extreme weather conditions have struck the city of Buffalo and the state of New York at the hardest. And there, people were found dead in cars or snowbanks. Around 200,000 Americans remained without electricity nationwide after a number peaked at 1.8 million on Saturday. Meanwhile, more than 50 million Americans remain under some sort of weather alert. The icy conditions have also taken their toll on neighboring Canada, and there, 4 people died in a bus rollover accident. Blackouts are also reported in several areas, including in Quebec, where almost 120,000 households are left without electricity. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In the U.S. and Arizona, judge on Saturday, 24th of December, rebuffed an effort by Carrie Lake to defeat a GOP candidate for governor of Arizona to reverse the outcome of her November election, ruling against her after a two-day trial that showcased speculation about systematic malfeasance at the polls, but failed to prove it. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Associated Press has covered this story. A judge has thrown out Republican Carrie Lake's challenge of her defeat in the Arizona governor's race to Democrat Katie Hobbs, rejecting her claim that problems with ballot printers at some polling places on Election Day were the result of intentional misconduct. In a decision on Saturday, 24th of December, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Peter Thompson, who was appointed by former Republican Governor Jan Brewer, said the court did not find clear and convincing evidence of the widespread misconduct that Carrie Lake had alleged had affected the result of the 2022 general election. Carrie Lake will appeal the ruling, she said in a statement. The judge said Lake's witnesses didn't have any personal knowledge of intentional misconduct. The court cannot accept speculation or conjecture in place of clear and convincing evidence, Judge Thompson said. Carrie Lake, who lost to Katie Hobbs by just over 17,000 votes, was among the most vocal 2022 Republicans promoting former President Donald Trump's election lies, which she made the centerpiece of her campaign. While most of the other election deniers around the country conceded after losing their races in November, Carrie Lake has not. Instead, she asked the judge to either declare her the winner or order a revote in Maricopa County, home to more than 60% of Arizona's voters. In the ruling, Judge Peter Thompson acknowledged the anger and frustration of voters who were inconvenienced in the election and noted that setting aside the results of an election has never been done in the history of the United States. But this court's duty is not solely to incline an ear to public outcry, the judge said. It's to subject plaintiffs' claims and defendants' actions to the light of the courtroom and scrutiny of the law. Lawyers for Carrie Lake focused on problems with ballot printers at some polling places in Maricopa County in Arizona. The defective printers produced ballots that were too light to be read by the on-site tabulators at polling places. Lines backed up in some areas amid the confusion. County officials say everyone had a chance to vote and all ballots were counted, since ballots affected by the printers were taken to more sophisticated counters at the Election Department headquarters. They are in the process of investigating the root cause of the printer problems. Carrie Lake's attorneys also claimed the chain of custody for ballots was broken at an off-site facility where a contractor scans mail ballots to prepare them for processing. They claim workers at the facility put their own mail ballots into the pile rather than sending their ballots through normal channels, and also that paperwork documenting the transfer of ballots was missing. Maricopa County officials dispute the claim. Carrie Lake faced extremely long odds in her challenge, needing to prove not only that misconduct occurred, but also that it was intended to deny her victory, and did in fact result in the wrong woman being declared the winner of the election. Earlier on Friday, 23rd of December, another judge dismissed Republican Abraham Hamade's challenge of results in his race against Democrat Chris Mays for Arizona Attorney General. The court concluded that Abraham Hamade, who finished 511 votes behind Chris Mays and hasn't conceded the race, didn't prove the errors in voting in vote counting that he had alleged. The Arizona Republic has also covered this story and gives us more details. In what should come as a surprise to absolutely no one, a judge on Saturday, 24th of December, ruled that Carrie Lake was not robbed of her right to be Arizona's next governor. This court acknowledges the anger and frustration of voters who were subjected to inconvenience and confusion at voter centers as technical problems arose during the 2022 general election, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Peter Thompson wrote. But the judge added, "This court's duty is not solely to incline an ear to public outcry, it is to subject plaintiffs' claims and defendants' actions to the light of the courtroom and scrutiny of the law." Naturally, Carrie Lake reacted to the loss with her trademark refusal to accept reality. "My election case provided the world with evidence that proves our elections are run outside of the law," she tweeted. This judge did not rule in our favor. However, for the sake of restoring faith and honesty in our elections, I will appeal this court ruling. Or put another way, for the sake of building a hope for political future, one that requires her to keep her supporters in a state of perpetual fury. Here in the real world, Judge Peter Thompson bent over backwards to give Carrie Lake her day in court. 2 days, actually, in which the judge afforded her every opportunity to prove that a Maricopa County elections officer intentionally rigged the 8th of November election, and that, as a result, Carrie Lake lost to Governor-elect Katie Hobbs. Instead, Carrie Lake presented a parade of witnesses who offered up opinions, speculation, and a sizable amount of wishful thinking to try to convince the judge that the Republican nominee was the victim of a fiendish plot by the Republican-run county. But what's that old saying? Wishing don't make it so. In his 10-page ruling, Judge Peter Thompson eviscerated the testimony of each of Carrie Lake's witnesses, from the partisan pollster who testified that his exit poll showed she should have won, to the cyber expert who claimed the county shrunk ballots so they couldn't be counted, before conceding that those ballots still would have been counted. It bears mentioning that election workers themselves were attested to by both plaintiffs' witnesses and the defendants' witnesses as being dedicated to performing their role with integrity, Judge Thompson wrote. Not perfectly, as no system on earth is perfect, but more than sufficient to comply with the law and conduct a valid election. This being Christmas, it would seem a good time for Carrie Lake to offer the state of Arizona a gift. After 46 days of decrying her loss and defaming the state's election workers, Carrie Lake should muster the grace to accept the verdict of the judge and concede the governor's race. I don't expect Carrie Lake to wish Katie Hobbs well, but she could at least acknowledge that Arizona has spoken.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the issue or the phenomenon of prophethood And we were saying that we were discussing about the socio-political or socio-economic class to which the prophets and messengers belonged before they, you know, came out to be prophets, before they announced their prophethood, or during their announcing their prophethood. And in due course of this discussion, we came to ask a few questions, and we say that do they belong to the rich class or the bourgeoisies, let's say? Do they belong to, the poor class or the weak class? Which class do they belong to in terms of the socio-economic status? Are they part of the, let's say, the royal families that existed in the past? And this is a question that is very important for us, because, as we say, these are those people who started off socio-political and economic changes in the world. Like, if you look at the major groups, major people in history that created a great change in the society, were the messengers and the prophets. So it is important for us to analyze, firstly, what socio-political class they belong to. And for that, we say we will concentrate on some of the sermons of Najul Balagha, and one of them being the 192nd sermon, which is also known as the Sermon of Qasi'a.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We are discussing about the topic of prophethood, and we want to analyze the idea of the socio-political class to which the prophets belong to. And we will take inspiration from this sermon of Najul Balagha, where Imam Ali alayhi salam explains about certain states, or certain state of affairs of the messengers and the prophets. How they were, how did they carry themselves, and what attitude they had, which will give us an idea as to what socio-political class, socio-economic class they belong to. Imam Ali alayhi salam says, فَلَوْ رَخَّصَ اللَّهُ فِي الْكِبَرِ لِأَحَدٍ مِّنْ عِبَادِهِ لَرَخَّصَ فِيهِ لِخَاصَّةِ أَنْبِيَائِهِ وَأُولِيَائِهِ. If Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala would have allowed any group of people to be proud, He would have allowed the messengers and the awliya to be proud. وَلَكِنَّهُ سُبْحَانَهُ كَرَّهَ إِلَيْهِمُ التَّكَابُرِ. But glory be to Allah, He made it detestable for those who are prophets and messengers. Like, the prophets and messengers have been created in a way that they detest pride. وَرَضِيَ لَهُمْ التَّوَاضُ. Then they are pleased with being humble and lowering themselves to others. فَأَلْصَقُوا بِالْأَرْضِ خُدُودَهُمْ وَعَفَّرُوا فِي التُّرَابِ وُجُوهَهُمْ. So they were such that they would place their face on the earth, their cheeks on the earth, and they would, you know, kind of spread the dust of the earth on their faces. وَخَفَضُوا أَجْنِحَتَهُمْ للمؤمنين. And they lowered their wings towards the believers. In other words, they lowered themselves, they humbled themselves towards the believers. وَكَانُوا أَقْوَامًا مُسْتَضْعَفِينَ. And they were a group of people that belonged to the lower class of the society. وَكَانُوا قَوْمًا مُسْتَضْعَفِينَ. They were a group of people that were amongst the lower class of the society. So we notice that Imam Ali alayhi salam is now talking about this class, this socio-political class, this socio-economic class that the messengers were, and they were amongst the people that were of the lower class, means the hungry people, those who are in the state of hunger, those who didn't have a very good economic status and all that. Inshallah, we shall continue in the coming segment.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we saw that in Nahjul Balagha, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that the messengers belonged to the lower class of the society. That means the weaker class, the economically, you can say, less fortunate class of the community, of the society. And we say that they humbled themselves in front of others. They were not proud. They disliked pride. Though Allah would have allowed them to be proud. If Allah would have allowed anyone to be proud apart from amongst whole of His creation, He would have allowed the messengers. But they disliked it. Allah created them in a way that they loved to humble themselves, and they didn't like self-indulgence and, selfishness and worshipping themselves and only their own feelings and their own desires. Rather, they were a group of people that had given themselves for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and they were tested with servitude, and they hated pride and, that idea of being above others. They hated that. This is how the messengers were. And they were in that lower class. And they would spend their lives with those people who would be downtrodden, who would suffer under the hands of the oppressors. They were in that class. Not that they accepted the oppression, but they were in that class, basically. And they had the right attitude in all of this. Although they would be in that lower class, that doesn't mean they would be ignorant or they would be lacking values or cultural refineness. No, they had all of that. But only that they belonged to that class in the economic and social sense. And there was a reason behind that, inshallah, that we shall discuss in the coming sessions. That position that they were in, the mustad'afin, as they call that level, the lower class of the people, was necessary for them to bring about this great political, social and economic change in the people of the world. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the Limelight.
In Britain, many people have been forced to get help from food charities and also buy second-hand goods because of the cost of living crisis. The war in Ukraine, the reduction of energy exports from Russia to Europe, and the misguided policies of the British government have all worked together to cause the cost of living crisis. We take a look at some of the World Press and Media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered the story. A leading charity warned that Britain's poorest families are in acute need and urged ministers to provide immediate extra financial support. Gwen Hines, the chief executive of Save the Children, said severe financial hardship would really begin to bite in January, with many families already unable to afford basic goods. The grave message came as a poll for YouGov carried out for the Resolution Foundation found that 31% of British households in the bottom fifth of earners said they were significantly reducing the amount they spend on presents, festive food and other seasonal treats. That compared with 16% among the highest fifth of earners. Gwen Hines said, "Many families in Britain are living in dire circumstances right now, and we know Christmas and the New Year is going to be particularly difficult. We are concerned January will be the time financial hardship really begins to bite." The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, has announced that benefits will be upgraded by 10.1% in line with inflation in April, and low-income families are due to receive cost-of-living payments worth £900, in addition to the £650 paid in October and November. However, Save the Children called on the government to provide more support now to help families through a harsh winter. Gwen Hines said the benefits paid to low-income parents should have an urgent £20 a week uplift, which would provide a significant impact to children's well-being right now that can be sustained long into the future. Better known for its work in developing countries, Save the Children has handed out 2,344 direct grants to low-income families in Britain over the past year. The charity said these early years grant, first introduced during the COVID pandemic, have been used by parents, some of whom are in work, to buy food, warm clothes and even beds for their children. With rocketing fuel prices expected to make the next 3 months particularly difficult, Save the Children recently raised the budget for programme by 25%. Gwen Hines said, "The British government must do much more to support those on the lowest incomes as our grants programme continues to reveal acute need for parents both in and out of work." The Resolution Foundation poll carried out by YouGov among working families showed that Britain's lowest earners are not alone in tightening their belts. In total, 64% of all workers surveyed said they would be trying to rein in the cost of Christmas this year amid widespread predictions that the economy is sliding into recession. British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story. Figures suggest charity shops have experienced a boom in shoppers searching for second-hand Christmas gifts amid the cost-of-living crisis. The British Heart Foundation has experienced its biggest ever sales week this December, while Barnardo's, Age UK and Cancer Research UK have reported a rise in revenue over the festive period. Although many people buy Christmas gifts from charity shops for ethical and environmental reasons, the results of recent surveys by several charities suggest The main driver of this year's trend is financial. The British Heart Foundation's retail director, Alison Swain Hughes, said the charity made record sales over 1 week this month. Alison Swain Hughes added, "Our first week in December 2022 set a record as our biggest ever sales week, with our shops and stores, along with our online channels like eBay, all performing significantly ahead of the same week last year." She added, "While sales of men's and women's clothing and accessories continue to perform ahead of last year, we also saw particularly strong sales in our home stores, with bedroom and dining room being a highlight." Swain Hughes added that a November survey of more than 2,000 people implied that one-third of Britons were adjusting their Christmas shopping to spend with charity retailers due to the rising cost of living. Barnardo's charity shops have recorded a 30% increase in sales revenue over the past 2 months, compared with the same period last year. Age UK stores have seen a 15% increase in average customer spend so far in 2022, while Cancer Research UK shops recorded a 13% rise in sales from April to November of 2022, compared with the same period in 2021. The managing director of Barnardo's Retail, Mark Gregory, said the charity is seeking increasing numbers of customers shopping for gifts. He said, "We know that this winter and the build-up to Christmas has been incredibly tough for so many of children, young people and families that Barnardo supports. And we know that the cost of living crisis is impacting on our customers too." Cancer Research UK's Director of Trading, Julie Bayard, said the charity has recorded a steady rise in sales in the run-up to Christmas, reminiscent of similar trends during times of recession. The Daily Mail has also covered the same story. British ministers have been warned of a ticking time bomb after official forecasts showed the cost of servicing household debt in Britain will double to £125 billion in 2024. Figures from the Office for Budget Responsibility revealed the total cost of servicing debt, including mortgages, personal loans and credit, across all British households this year is £60 billion. But with interest rates and the price of mortgages soaring, this is set to reach £107 billion next year and an eye-watering £125 billion the year after. This is equivalent to £4,450 per British household. The Office for Budget Responsibility have also forecast that debt costs will take up 7.5% of households' disposable income in 2024, compared to just 3.8% today. It is even forecast that household debt servicing costs will reach £137 billion in 2027, when debt costs will nudge to 7.6% of households' disposable income. Earlier this month, the Bank of England warned that millions of British households are expected to face increases in monthly mortgage payments of more than £100 per end of next year. The Bank of England also found those with mortgages on fixed rates set to expire by the end of 2023 are facing average repayment increases of around £3,000 per year. This was based on market interest rates at the end of November, with the Bank of England having since hiked its base rate to 3.5% on 15th of December. Liz Truss's disastrous mini-budget was widely seen to have put a trust premium on the cost of mortgages in the wake of this autumn's financial turmoil during her time as Prime Minister. The Liberal Democrats are calling for urgent action from the government to prevent people losing their homes as a result of soaring mortgage interest rates. The party wants ministers to ban banks from repossessing people's homes over the Christmas period. They have also proposed a mortgage protection fund, paid for by reversing cuts to taxes on banks, to assist families facing crippling increases in their loan repayments. This will be targeted at those most at risk of repossession, such as homeowners on the lowest incomes and those seeing the sharpest rises in their mortgage rates.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been narrated from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. This hadith is about the virtue of gaining knowledge for the sake of Allah, as well as the, you know, the vice and the wretchedness of gaining knowledge for somebody other than Allah. So in this hadith, a virtue has been explained as well as a vice. We all know that knowledge is something that has been recommended in Islam. It's very, it's something that has been encouraged in Islam. And this is something almost self-evident. When the Prophet ﷺ was actually delegated as a prophet, you know, and revelation was first brought to him, the very first thing that was revealed to him was Iqra, read in the name of God. And, you know, God Almighty talked about reading, God talked about learning, you know, and so, and, you know, so there's no, we know that there's no restrictions on knowledge, you know. The Prophet said, seek knowledge from the cradle to the grave. So temporally, there's no restrictions. Spatially, there's no restrictions. The Prophet said that you should seek knowledge even if it's, you know, if you have to travel to China. You know, these are all very famous prophetic hadiths. Right, so knowledge is something, it's a virtue, and it's something virtuous in Islam. But like every virtue, it has certain conditions, right? If those conditions are fulfilled, then that virtue, it has those virtuous effects that we expect from it. Otherwise, if it doesn't fulfill those conditions, those spiritual and religious conditions, then obviously the effects, the spiritual and otherworldly effects that we expect from it, they won't accrue from it. One of those conditions is a sincerity of intention, you know, the sincerity of attention that we make, and we're seeking knowledge for the sake of God. The Prophet ﷺ said, he who seeks knowledge for Allah, no sooner does he learn even a chapter of it, then it increases him in humility within himself, right? So how do we know whether we're seeking knowledge for the sake of God or not? Is there a criterion? The Prophet here, he tells us a criterion by means of which we can understand whether, you know, our intention is sincere or not. Does this knowledge that I'm gaining, does it increase me in my humility or not? The Prophet says, in humbleness in front of people, when I meet people, am I more humble than I used to be? Or no, do I feel proud? Do I feel better than them, right? First of all, within myself, do I feel humble? Do I feel, has my pride and my arrogance, has it decreased or has it increased? Then how do I act in front of other people? Do I act ignorantly or do I act more humbly? It increases his fear of Allah, right? When we learn and we gain knowledge, we learn about, you know, God's, his greatness, his, you know, his infinite power and knowledge. It should increase our humility before him, right? And obviously, we are constantly in the presence of God, so this humility should be, you know, it should be sustained by this person who has knowledge. And his striving for, and his striving in religion, you know, this person should constantly strive to be a religious and a pious individual. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the gaining of knowledge, the virtue of gaining knowledge for the sake of Allah, from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.